Paul Wilson is our guest speaker for today, and Paul is the superintendent of the Pacific Southwest Conference of the Covenant Church, and that means that he gets to be the pastor and the leader for the 160 churches that are a part of our conference. And so he is, another title for him is Supreme Executive Ruler, but he doesn't like to be called that. We call him the superintendent. So please welcome Paul Wilson.
You know, I think superintendent is bad enough. You look in the Bible, you see apostle, evangelist, pastor, lover of God. You don't see superintendent, but whatever that other thing you just gave me, supreme executive ruler, that's bad. I was the youngest covenant pastor ever asked to oversee a region, and that was years ago. I oversaw Alaska. And I was in my mid-30s, and they gave me one of these titles, field director. And I don't know, that one didn't inspire me. So I officially changed my title in Alaska, and I made cards up. I became the field and stream director. I can understand that because I'm kind of about the outdoor thing. The Eskimo people gave me a name, and it is an honor when you're brought in and made Eskimo by the people. Most of our churches up there are Eskimo. And probably half of my good friends in this world are Eskimo, and they're just awesome. But they've given me a name, which translated is Beluga, the white whale. And then they all laugh like that and say, "Paul, name of great honor." And then they laugh some more. I want to thank Tom Patitucci as your transitional pastor here. Tom is a guy who loves God and has loved you. Give Tom a big hand. I'm president of the Tom Patitucci fan club, if anybody wants badges or anything. But just thanks for being here. And yeah. I couldn't be more enthused about the pastoral candidate who's being brought to you, John Woolner. John is someone who's been a church planter, as you know, has developed a really strong ministry in Manhattan Beach. But here's the a thing about John. If you put 10 pastors together, or maybe even 50, and if you wonder which one's got the deep life of prayer, it's John Woolner. So with everything you are going to see publicly, I want to say behind that is real devotion to the Father. And I want to also just say how much I appreciate your search committee. I've had the honor of getting to know them and seeking to serve them. And sometimes, you know, like when you're with a group of people and you can just tell that these are fine people, and you just feel honored to be with them. So your search committee has really, they've put their whole hearts into this. So would you just thank God for your search committee? Yeah. And your chairman, Tim's not here, and I'm used to church chairman's kind of calling the shots, you know, and directing whatever. He's with the kids. You got a church chairman who's a real servant, and so, I want you to tell Tim, and he'll find it embarrassed. But we thanked God for Tim Stone. Yeah. Okay, so today, I've decided is the beginning of the next chapter for Edgewater. It begins today, so this is the beginning of the next chapter. I can't tell you how much I honor and love your founding pastor, John Fanous. He's a guy that I've learned a lot from, and I've gotten to be his coach, and I just love. And I just want to also recognize a lot of heart and a lot of love and a lot of energy from John has been here. And John, I don't know if he knows that John Woolner is going to be the candidate yet, if he's heard this, but you want to talk about a guy who's going to be happy. It's going to be John Fanous. Real happy. And I want to say that this next week is your candidating weekend, but this marks the beginning of the next chapter. So I have decided to not go easy on you. I'm going to give to you what I think is the hardest command in Scripture. We're going all the way. Okay, you ready? It's Ephesians 5:1. Ephesians 5:1. I think Edgewater's ready for this. Ephesians 5:1. Here it is. I'm going to give you the first clause. The first clause of Ephesians 5:1, I think, is the toughest thing in Scripture. It says, be imitators of God. How about that? Is that pretty much? Can you think of anything tougher? Does anybody have difficulty sometimes being an imitator of a halfway decent person? Yeah. Yeah? But here we're told, be imitators of God. You almost want to stop before you start. But the next clause is the chronological beginning. That's what happens first. What we're going to talk about today is who we are and what we get to do. Who we are and what we get to do. The next clause describes who we are, and that is the chronological beginning. If I asked you, who are you, you might answer in terms of being a husband, being a wife, being a parent, being a grandparent, being a child, being a friend, and all of those things are significant and important. You might answer in terms of vocation. You might, when asked the question, think about all the things you aren't. Does anybody ever make a case against themselves? Inside your head, you think about who you'd hope to be, and you just wonder, why do I always do that? Why can't I ever get this straight? You might think that way. Well, I want to remind you of your true identity if you've said yes to Jesus Christ. This is your true identity. And your true identity, there is nothing better that could ever be said about you. It's the greatest thing that could ever be said about anyone. You ready? It's who we are. It's who you are. You are a child of God. The next clause is, as dearly loved children. Be imitators of God as dearly loved children. The best thing that could ever happen to you is to be a child of God. And when we live our lives from another foundational identity and get a few degrees off, a lot of things begin to go wrong. We begin to be insecure. We can experience fear. We can experience arrogance. It can go in another kind of way. But when you give in to your birthright, your true identity, that you are a child of God, it changes everything. I want you to say to the person on your right and to your left, stand up for a second, stand up. I want you to tell them on your right and your left, you are a child of God, and that changes everything. Okay, now if you're next to a guy, thump him. I'm not going to do this one. Thump the guy in the chest and tell him, you are a child of God, and that changes everything. We don't do that with women. We don't thump women. Yeah. Okay, have a seat. Not only that, but I used to be a history and an English teacher, and I know when you hear English teacher, that makes some of you a little nervous. Remember that word adjective. We got an adjective here. Because that you're a love child of God isn't enough. The word says there in that clause, you are a loved child. When we talk about God, it seems to me that oftentimes we can forget and not appreciate that God experiences emotion. And the only reason that we can experience emotion like love, joy, and pain is we are created in the image of God. But what we reflect in emotion, and we feel like our emotions are strong, are a faint echo of the strength of the emotion in our Father. Are you following me here? We experience emotion because we're created in the image of God. But what we experience is just a faint echo. So here, get ready for it, that you're a love child of God. God feels God-sized love for you. He feels it. And I want that to mean something to you right now. When God looks at you, he feels indescribable love. Love is more than just feeling, but it includes feeling. Do not turn God into a force and depersonalize him. He feels God-sized love for you. I want to tell you something about yourself. And I only know a handful of you, but I know this is true. In a relationship, if or in a conversation or interaction, even if in that relationship or conversation you are getting some kind of benefit from it, it is an empty experience unless you feel like you mattered to that other person. Isn't that right? I mean, somebody could be kind to you, polite to you, they can even do stuff for you, but it is empty if you don't believe you matter to them. I want to tell you something. It's good news, and it has everything to do with you being a loved child of God, but you matter to God. You matter to him. That's why he knows all the hairs on your head, and he knows all the big things in your life and all the small things in your life, but they all matter to God because you matter to God. I'll tell you, every once in a while I'll say something at home, and I'm the dad, and that means I say it, and that's supposed to happen. We had this dog that, you know, we used to live in Alaska. I've been, you know, pastor in Oakland up until this last spring when I became a superintendent. And we brought down from Alaska this dog, big Alaska sled dog kind of dog. And we were really worried about the dog. I mean, how's it going to adjust to the heat in California? We bring the dog down, put it in the backyard. The dog feels sunlight. And man, you never saw such a happy dog. He thought he had won the dog lottery, man. He didn't have to be freezing anymore out there in the cold and have all the icicles on his fur. He just completely dug it. Well, the dog died, and we all felt badly. No, I mean, the dog died. It was 15 years old. It's going to happen to us, too. So, you know, we buried the dog in the backyard. You know, it's supposed to be illegal or something in California to bury a dog in the backyard. If I'm paying taxes, I'm burying the doggone dog where I want to. Come get me. Come get me. So we had the service, and we all shared, you know, my three boys and wife and I were all teary, shared something, you know, thankful for the dog and burying. But afterwards, you know, I thought, that's it for dogs. We're not going to have any more dogs. Because let's face it, dogs can be kind of a pain in the neck. You're going out of town, you got to take care of the dog. And in California, people like put dogs up in dog hotels. I'm just not into that. You know, paying for my dog, you know. Okay, I don't. You got to find somebody, you know, to watch your dog, or you got to do something. You know, they're kind of a pain. They tear up your yard. At least my dogs always have. And tear up your yard. So I said, no more dogs. I said, that's it. We've loved our dog. You know, it's been great. No more dogs. So about a week later, my middle son brought home a stray. Okay. Now, there's a certain kind of dog, a breed, that is in the newspaper every once in a while, right? That does something really bad. Okay, I want you to think about what that breed is that does something bad. I've never been around these dogs, and one thing I've known is I'd never wanted one of these kinds of dogs. What breed of dog is that? Yeah, pit bull. Now, I want to say that there's pit bulls, and then there's stray pit bulls, and then there's stray pit bulls from Oakland. Can we just be honest here? I'm close enough to my hometown. Can we just say it? And then there's stray pit bulls from Oakland named Bullet, who, by the way, is 85 pounds. So he brings home Bullet, the stray pit bull from Oakland. I've said no dogs. After 15 minutes, this dog loves me. That changed everything. I don't know, I mean, there's mean pit bulls in the world, but this dog has never had a mean thought, and its life. This dog is pure love. This dog is like what you're going to do when you're resurrected and with the Lord forever, and he gives you a new attitude. That's my dog, Bullet. And it may seem superficial, but Bullet brings me joy. You want to know why? I matter to him. And so Bullet, when I come home, I got to hold Bullet back. And this dog is tough because he wants to kiss me all over the face. And it may seem superficial, but I like mattering to Bullet. It makes me happy. So I got to hold him back. He wants to kiss me everywhere. I've been married 34 years, and it's been a while since I've had to fight my wife off like that. You know what I'm saying? Anybody relate here? We like mattering. You know, we're made that way. I think we have an intuition. The people all around Pittsburgh and Antioch and, you know, around that represent this community, we want to matter. And here's the thing. It's the good news. You've never met anyone who doesn't matter to God, and we get to tell them. And that changes the way we treat people. Everybody matters. You can't be too fat, too thin, too old, too young, too rich, too poor. You can't be too gang affiliated. You can't be too Republican or too Democrat. Everybody matters to God. You never met anybody. Isn't that exciting? That is exciting. And so, love child to God, I want to say, you matter to the Father, and he feels it for you. Now, there's also an adverb there in that clause. Remember, it's be imitators of God as dearly loved children. It's just more strength there. The Father wants us to know it, so we got that adverb, dearly. You are a dearly loved child of God. That's your identity here. If you want to get a tattoo, it wouldn't be a bad one. When you go home, if you're a kid here and they say, what'd you learn at church today? Pastors told me to get a tattoo. Well, not exactly, but I'm just saying. But if you want to remember something, it's your true identity. You're a dearly loved child of God. Let me tell you what happens. Then when we start with that chronological beginning that we're a dearly loved child of God, then being an imitator of God, and we know how God acts, thinks, what he does, what he prioritizes, because we're told that Jesus shows us the face of God in what he does. Then, when you give in to that, you want to follow Jesus and be an imitator of Jesus and his priorities and his attitudes and the whole thing. So that's the first half. Who do we get to be? We get to be dearly loved children of God. It's our true identity. We get to give in to our birthright that we matter. We get to treat everyone as though they matter. And I'll tell you, it's at that point that life takes on new color, new energy. The oxygen is sweeter. The possibilities are greater. The next clause is live a life of love as Jesus has, who has loved us and laid himself down for us as a fragrant offering. I want to show you a picture of a guy I love. This is my buddy, Jimron Fall. Jimron is Cambodian, and Jimron and I speak together occasionally, and whenever we speak, Jimron always buys us matching shirts. By the way, they're different sizes. I just want to point that out. And I tell Jimron, I say, Jimron, you know, both of us need to work on the cool factor just a little bit, and the matching shirts isn't helping, you know. I don't know. But Jimron says, Paul, I want everyone to know we're brothers. So my brother, where I've pastored, we've had 50 or so adults who are survivors of the Khmer Rouge, Cambodian, in our church in Oakland. And each one went through that terrible season. If you don't know the history, in the mid-70s, there were around 7 million people in Cambodia. By 1980, around 4 million. You know, getting a large fraction of the population, 30, some will say 40%, murdered. Terrible. Every adult member of our congregation, just think about how this changes a church. Every adult Cambodian member had at least one family member murdered. At least one. Jimron had a handful of brothers, his father. Very, 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 very terrible. And so Jimron was imprisoned, and he has shared, and he will speak about his experience, but he has shared more detail with me than with anyone. And what took place in the imprisonment, there's never been a movie. Think about horrible things that you've seen depicted in movies. There's never been a movie showing war or anything that comes anywhere near what he experienced. You would not be able to watch it on a screen. And so we were over in Cambodia, and Jimron has done a lot of ministry in Cambodia going back. He's a pastor. We became friends, and we became partners. And Jimron, I asked Jimron one time, we were in Cambodia, if he would like to go back to where he was imprisoned. He'd never been back there. And he thought about it for a day, and I said, Jimron, you know, I'd just be there with you. If this would somehow be important in your healing process, I'd be quiet, I'd pray, and, you know, we could be there a short time or a long time. And after a day, he decided that he'd like to go back. Go ahead and put that, yeah, next picture there. Jimron and I went back in. I don't know what I expected it to look like, but I thought it would look ugly, but it was actually, where he was in prison, was actually in the middle of these really pristine, gorgeous rice fields. And we were up on a levee, and Jimron would point to a place, and he'd reference a story of torture, and I would know the story already, and no more would be said. And then we would go further, and he'd say, this is where, and he would say the name. This person was killed, and then would reference another horrible thing, most of which I don't even want to even begin to put any detail on, and say this is where it happened. And he, of course, cried in a very quiet, deep, heart-pained way, and I prayed. Then after a while, Jimron pointed to an irrigation ditch, and he said, Paul, that's where it happened. And I knew what he was talking about. It was one of many times that Jimron was beaten to unconsciousness. Now, that had happened many times, that he was beaten to unconsciousness. But on this occasion, the guards placed him face down in the irrigation ditch if he was still alive. He thinks they thought he was dead already, but in case he was still alive, he would drown. And there was so much brutality going on, and life was so cheap. Something else got the guards' attentions, and they went in the other direction. And Jimron, a couple of his brothers, ran to where he was, and they pulled him out of the irrigation ditch and helped him come back to consciousness. And then after a while, they held him, and he got up to his feet and was supported by his brothers. And Jimron was not a Christian, but he knew a name, and he looked to the skies, and he said a three-word prayer. Jesus, save me. And Jimron believes that God spoke to him. His life profoundly changed from that moment. Jimron believes God spoke to him. I believe God spoke to him. And this is what he heard God say. You don't have to hate anymore. You get to love everyone. And Jimron says that his life, his heart, was changed in that moment. That he felt great compassion for those who were doing great evil. and that all the hatred left him, and he felt extraordinary love. It would be later when people would explain to Jimron, when he was in the refugee camp, what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. But he knew from that moment that Jesus was real and Jesus had changed his life, and he began to talk to this Jesus and later was given a Bible and learned more about this Jesus. Well, when we were done at the prisoner of war camp, now just hardly anything left of it, Jimron said, "Paul, there's someone that I want to take out to dinner. And I want to tell you that I wasn't real happy about his idea. Of all the people that Jimron has told me about the guards and the rest, Evil Incarnate was the commandant of the prisoner of war camp. Jimron said, "Paul, I know where he lives, and it's not far from here." You see, it's a very different world, and very few of these people have ever been prosecuted, less than 1%. And Jimron said, "I want to take him out to dinner and tell him I love him and tell him about Jesus and tell him he can be forgiven." Now, I also believe in justice. Do you know what I'm saying? And so, and I know what this guy did, and I know what he did to others, and I know what he did to friends. So I was conflicted about this. But we took the commandant out to dinner. There's the commandant. Now, if you can see me, and by the way, I used to be more of a beluga than I am now. I've taken off 80 pounds. You can see me. I'm smiling, but I can fake it, okay, a little bit. Because I'm thinking, yeah, I'm just not sure. If you can see Jimron's face, that is a guy who believes the full gospel of Jesus Christ, who's taught me as much about Jesus as anyone I've ever known, fully in love. Do you remember what Jesus said? Jesus said to love your enemies. And a thing that is almost distasteful for me to say today, but I just got to give you historic reality. The Romans have never been shown in film what the brutality was like in Palestine and elsewhere. It was horrible. It would be like if ISIS came to Pittsburgh. It's not. And Jesus said to love them. You see, we have measuring sticks to love. And it's a part, I just got to tell you, it's a major part of the Christian gospel. It's huge. It's huge. But that most people call themselves Christians have never believed in the full gospel. The second part, what do we get to do? We get to love everybody. We get to. We don't let another person's evil take away, listen to this, our birthright that we get to love everybody. It doesn't mean that we don't believe in things like justice, but we cannot be enslaved by anything that comes from evil. We get to love everybody. So Jimron, he is a guy who's given in to the full gospel of Jesus. He's still helping me. I think the commandant is a little worried. I bet, what is the big white beluga doing here? Is he going to put a bop on me? Well, you know, I was ready. So what's he doing here? I got to tell you, he did not become a Christian. Jimron has, on one of his trips back to Cambodia, has taken him out since and explained about forgiveness and the rest, and he still hasn't. What I want to say to you is, who are we? As we begin this next chapter, we are dearly loved children. That's who Edgewater Church is. What do we get to do? We get to love everybody. People have measuring sticks on love. If people agree with me, if they have the same morality, if you don't have the same morality, well, you're outside of my thing of love. The same values, you're outside. You got to be nice to me to a certain point. I've got to tell you, the freedom that Jesus wants to bring to us is we get to love everybody. Now, I want everybody to lean in towards me. Everybody lean. You got to lean. Because, see, you're going to remember that the guy made you lean. Here's what happens. You treat everybody that you ever meet like they matter. This isn't rocket science, how you build a ministry. You treat everybody like they matter. Everybody you meet in this community like they matter. You know you're a dearly loved child of God, and you get to love everybody. Go go do it, okay? That's the deal there. Do you believe in the power of one person who would do that? The power of how God could use one person who really gets it, that they're a dearly loved child and everyone matters and you get to love them. Do you believe in the power of that? I do too. I do too. Let me tell you about the first time I ever went behind a dog sled. It was like, this is a long time ago now, like 25 years ago. And it was like January, and I was up in Alaska, frozen Yukon River. I'm like 400 miles from the nearest road, and I'm just getting acquainted. And I see this small Eskimo guy. He's going up and down the river. I couldn't believe how fast these dog teams go. This guy was flying. And so I waved him over and asked him if he would teach me how to do it. And he was really excited to teach me, you know, the way if you care about something and someone else is interested. And so he showed me how to, you know, distribute my weight on the dog team, what to say to the dogs, showed me where the brake was. And this guy, again, he was just flying. And so I'm on the sled, and so I do the brake, and I give the dogs the word, and the dogs take off. This guy weighed about 105 pounds. I go about 130, maybe 135. After about 5 minutes, we got about an inch and a quarter. Lead dog turns to me. He's wondering how this big beluga got on the back end of his sled. So the guy goes, and no joke, he gets like 10 more dogs. He puts them on. I kick the brake. I give the word. Boom, we're flying. I believe in the power of one person who gives in to that they matter to God. Everybody else matters to God. Lives from the identity of being a dearly loved child and who realizes it's their birthright to love everyone. But when you get a whole bunch of dogs doing it together, I'm calling you dogs right now. You get a whole bunch of dogs. I mean, you're really into it. You're focused. That's who God's made you. That's what you get to do. I really believe in the exponential, transformational gift that's brought to a church and to a community when people do that. God bless you all. Go do it. It's been a great honor.